Oh, welcome. This is Steve Lever, Superintendent of Schools here at Octorara School District. And we have special guests. This is season two of Pod Soup, and it's stories about Octorara students doing Octorara stuff. And today we have two very special guests, Kendall Dixon and Sierra Runge. And they were just today inducted into the Hall of Fame. And, you know, this podcast is really about Octorara students, current students, but we can stretch it a little bit and go to former students because these two have such incredible stories. So thank you for being here. I want to start out with our vision here is something that when I heard you speak to students this morning, you're living out our vision, which is to empower students to build successful futures. And both of you have taken your own career pathways and have led to success in ways that you probably didn't really envision when you were 15 or 17 or 18 years old. So talk a little bit about that. How were you empowered by your time here? What were the things that you took that have helped you to find, you know, your successful futures? So, Kendall.
So for me, it was honestly, my future was a little bit different. My path was a little bit different. I didn't really have an end goal, honestly, coming into it. I wasn't sure that I was going to even end up going to college. I wasn't sure what the future had for me, if I was going to be honest. Coming into senior year was a very rough year for me emotionally, losing my grandfather, who was like my father at that time. Just narrowly missing districts the year before, being the top seed, missing it by a tenth of a second. Senior year, honestly, it was a lot of emotion for me, being an 18-year-old boy going there. So college really wasn't.
So in the district meet,
yeah,
you missed it by a tenth of a second.
A tenth of a second, yeah. So I ended up getting second, and I missed qualifying on time by a tenth of a second, which ended up being the last race that my grandfather ever watched me race. So, yeah, it was a big emotional mess for me there. And actually I was working here. You guys have the program where, some high school students can like work during the summer and like be janitors. I was a janitor here and I was here when I had found he passed in August and I literally just stopped coming to work. You know, it was like, it's just kind of like depression, you know? So senior year was rough and I spoke about Coach Lambert in the speech today and he really was a huge impact on me. If it wasn't for him, I would have probably never went to college, honestly.
Wow. Wow. Sierra, you took a non-traditional path through high school.
Very, very non-traditional pathway for me. So I had my freshman year and half of kind of 50-50 of my sophomore year was here in school. And then I really started picking up on training. That's when I started really, really honing in. And I made the decision to go down to North Baltimore Aquatic Club, which is in Baltimore, Maryland. So hour and a half one-way commute. We made the decision, me and my family, that was what was best for me to go train with some of the best in the world, like Michael Phelps, Allison Schmidt, just multi-time Olympians, Olympic coach, Bob Bowman. So that was like, all right, here we go. And we didn't
have a swim program.
No, there was no.
So you were swimming elsewhere locally.
Yeah, so I was locally swimming. I started off at the Jennersville Y, so I started local and then kind of had to branch out a little bit more as the goals got bigger and bigger and bigger. But the cool thing was that I was still able to come and do classes my sophomore year in the morning and then go down in the afternoon and train down in Baltimore. And then as I started getting older and closer to national teams and making international events, we ended up working with Octorara to have me still be enrolled, but do online and kind of do this hybrid action that ultimately led, you know, graduated high school and went on to college and swim internationally and all that stuff. But the ability to work with Octorara on graduating and doing classes and just everything that I needed to do to be successful, both academically and athletically, was huge. Because it's, you know, without that and that support from the community and from the school, like, who knows what have happened, you know, like, so.
One of the people who was instrumental in helping you is still here, right?
Yeah. Jen Gurman. Yeah. So Mrs. Gurman was huge in helping with, you know, my mom and her talked, my dad and her talked, like everybody set that up. And I, you know, as a 13-, 14-, 15-year-old just showed up and was like, I'm just happy to be here. but they did all the hard work and they did the heavy lifting. And, you know, now being 28, retrospective. It's like you're going through the halls again and you're like, oh my gosh, I'm just so appreciative of all that everybody did here to support my path.
Yeah.
It was huge.
So both of you competed at the college level. Kendall, you were a walk-on.
Yeah.
So talk about that. So that's bold. Can you say, I think you said you were 130 pounds.
Oh man, 130 pound kid, man. Had the Allen Iverson inspired cornrows going on. my first tattoo. I begged my mom for it to honor my grandfather, and I was just like, I don't know what I want to do. I just want to run.
Yeah.
You know, running is kind of like the medicine that kind of cures the pain. You know, you just go out there and you get it done. Mm-hmm. So I ran really well. Won leagues. Won districts, go to states, and I actually reached out, and at the time was Coach Munshine, his family is very decorated. Irv Munshine, I believe, is one of the only coaches to coach for two different Olympic teams. Mm-hmm. He was there, Coach Moon. Brian Munshine was there, and I emailed him. I'm like, hey, not sure what's going on. Want to try to walk on the team or whatever, because senior year, I mean, the grades weren't great. You know, I really wasn't super motivated coming in with the emotional, I guess, damage that I was carrying. The burden being a young kid was really a lot to carry. My mother's a single mother, so, you know, so she lost her father. So we're all just making it through, you know,
as best. And where are you in, because there's six siblings, right?
Yeah, there's six of us, yes.
And where are you in
the I'm the second oldest. Okay. My brother, all of us have come through the Ocarrera community. We've all come through the train. We're all from right down the road, Aglin, which I say Glenbrook, I call it the Brook. Yeah. Like a little small area there where
the Aglin Hood.
Yeah, man, it is. It's like a little mini project there. It is. So, you know, very proud to come out of that situation and accomplish what I've accomplished.
Town.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. But I emailed Munshine and he says, yeah, I know who you are. I thought you got blown away by the rain and the wind because you're so skinny. And I was like, oh great. So I went there and kind of walked. I ran there and I was on a B team relay. By midway through indoor season, I was on the A team relay. And we ended up winning the conferences indoor and outdoor as a freshman. So it was like, okay, you know, now we're off, you know. Mm-hmm. So just really working.
Were your times improving that much?
Or oh, yeah.
Was it technique? What was?
I think it was just consistency, honestly. Yeah. A lot of the time in high school was a lot of basketball. So I was with Gene a lot, Coach Lambert a lot. Mm-hmm. I would oftentimes be at track practice, and then he'd toot the van, and then I'd go play basketball. Or I'd have a track meet, and then I'd go play basketball.
Yeah.
But more success I had in track. It's just a different, I don't know, it's different. There's something about doing something on your own that's different than a team sport. I love the camaraderie and the guys, but when you put the work in, it's different. You know, if I win, it's on me. Mm-hmm. And if I lose, it's on me. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I really, really valued and appreciated, the individualism of track and field, and also the team of it. Once the collective does well as individuals, then the team can do well.
Yeah.
But something that really hammered down for me moving forward. But with consistent training, then that was the first. I hadn't lifted in high school at all. So college, I got to lift full time. I was running now 5 days a week, like real workouts. My body changed fast. The times got better. I think I dropped 3 seconds, like 3 seconds from high school to college, which is doesn't really happen when you sprint. Yeah. So it's like, man, I wonder what would have happened if high school I had, you know? So it's
fun, you know? Taking it seriously there.
But it all worked out the way it was supposed to work out for sure.
So Sierra, yours is a different pathway because you started that kind of more intense training at a younger age. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about that experience.
Yeah. So when I made that transition over to training down at North Baltimore, I mean, our schedules were crazy. So we would do 2 hours in the morning, swim, and then have a break in between, and then 2 hours at night, and then an hour of lifting. Mm-hmm. And I started that at 15 years old, training with some of the best in the country. You know, just pounding yardage, just getting better, you know, working every day towards that. And it wasn't until I was about 17, 18 that I actually started to develop into the swimmer that, I ended up. Mm-hmm. So at 18, it was funny because I used to be a sprinter. And then we tried that for a year. Bob looked at me and he goes, all right, you're doing nothing but training distance because you're 6'4", you got a long, you know, wingspan, your stroke rate is slow. We're going to try distance. I was like, Okay, all right, here we go. I ended up that year making my first national team. That was 2014, so I was 18 at the time. Made my first national team and went on to 2014 Pan Pacific Games where I won a silver medal, first ever you know, big international competition. Katie Ledecky was, you know, my next to me, wow. like, just swimming against the best in the world. And I was like, what just happened? What happened? And so I transitioned out of that and went straight into college.
Yeah.
And through college, you know, it's a very different experience than high school. So I swam in college, and that year we became the NCAA champions, team champions, and went on to do, you know, we set American records. We did I was Pac-12, you know, record holder, you know, all this stuff that happened. But it's like, it's such a transition out of high school into college, because every step of the way you feel like you're the adult, right? Like, you're like, oh, like, I got it. I got it. And then you look back now and it's like, no, you're a kid. But yeah, so mine was a little bit more fast-tracked, if you will. Yeah. At a very young age, rose very quickly in the ranks. So handling that as an 18-year-old is always super interesting. So.
Yeah, I was going to say that you having success, having, you know, you're dropping names that virtually everybody in the country knows
yeah.
those names.
Yeah.
And so how difficult was it to manage that success as a teenager?
Yeah.
Who we all know how teenagers are.
Yeah.
You know, they're, you know, 18. And when I had my first child, I said to my dad, you know, Dad, every year that my child grows, you become more wise.
Yeah.
All the yeah. things that at 18 I rejected now all of a sudden made
You're
sense.
You're like, I understand
so,
now.
So, yeah, what was that like managing that success? Because you yeah. also, you know, had some transfers in university, mm-hmm. but you were still, it wasn't because you weren't having success.
Yeah.
It was because of, you know, choices that mm-hmm. you were encountering. So how difficult was it to manage that?
It was, I think at the time I didn't realize the difficulty of it. I was lucky enough to have incredible mentors and friends throughout the, you know, I was training at 15 with people who were 23, 24, 25. So I had the ability to kind of pull on their advice, just pull in their ear a little bit and say like, hey, like what's, you know, how do I do this? And I think there was a little bit of like, I don't know what it means to be this good. So I'm just going to be this good. And it just, you know, there was no, I didn't think too hard into it. I just was like, I'm me, I'm, you know, Sierra Runge. I'm going to conduct myself the way that I've always conducted myself. But I also had the ability to pull on these mentors who before me, you know, and with me were doing all these incredible things with the national team, you know, winning gold medals, competing at such a high degree that I was brought along with them.
Yeah.
So I just, as long as I kept my head on my shoulders, which, that has been something that I always, throughout my entire career, is very much speak humbly, perform arrogantly. I always wanted to conduct myself in a way that represented who I was. So that didn't change throughout, you know, fame, not fame, starting off in high school, all the way through to when I retired. I tried to always speak humbly and perform arrogantly and conduct myself in a way that, you know, I can be proud of, my family can be proud of, and my community that knows me can be proud of, mm-hmm. And my country, you know, mm-hmm. representing your country on the world stage.
Yeah.
It's like, you got all eyes on you and you're right. yeah. like, you're on TV representing. So,
now, I think Kendall wants to know this as much as I do, unless he's already asked you.
What's that?
So what was that? I mean, we all just watched the Olympics this
sure.
summer, right?
Yeah.
And, you see athletes, you hear stories about, you know, post Olympics and mm-hmm. you know what happens. What was that like to be in that setting? Was it did it hit you at the time? Did it hit you later? Is it just a thing because you had been through so many competitions?
Yeah. So when I made the Olympic team, because Olympic trials are by far the more stressful meet, surprisingly. Everybody asks so Olympic trials is more stressful than the games.
Okay. Oh.
Just because the US is so deep in talent. Mm. With swimmers, so you're fighting for your life essentially. So the just the stress of it is huge. So when I made the team, I mean, there's a photo of me, and I'm like turned around, looked at the giant jumbotron, and I was just like crying.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go to the Olympics, and it's kind of like this whirlwind, can't believe it's happening to you, amazing feeling because you go through all these swim camps, and you're with your teammates, and you're doing the thing in between trials and the games.
Yeah.
Then you get to the games and you're like, okay, I'm in the Olympic Village. I'm doing the thing. You walk out on deck and you're like, I am at the Olympic Games. Every part of like at the time it was, you know, 16 years of my career
yeah.
had been towards this moment.
Yeah.
And so it was funny because I was on the 4x200 freestyle relay, so I had the ability to have my teammates with me, who were all seasoned veterans. I think there was two rookies, two veterans. And so I was able to, you know, we were in the ready room because they stick you in this little room to make sure everybody's there, and then they parade you out. But I was able to be, like, kind of goofing off, keeping it late, enjoying the process. And then once you walk out on the deck, you're like, okay, it's game time now. Yeah. And, but the funny part was, is like, it took it down because my parents were, when we walked out onto the deck, my parents were behind that wall. And you just hear, let's go, Sierra. And it just like completely took, like, I was like, now I am at every swim meet I've ever grown up doing. This is right. The same water that I've swum in. It's the same length of pool. Right. So it just took the panic out and right. just made it fun while also still being nervous. But it's an interesting thing because you have to lock into, and I'm sure with track you had this too, is you lock into, like, this is just another event.
Yeah.
This is just another thing. This is the same pool that I've swum up and down in multiple times, so many times in my life.
Right.
But it definitely had, like, that, just that, like, complete feeling of, like, I did it. I'm at my goal. I have arrived at the location I've been working towards my entire life. And then the gold medal on top of it was, like, you know, crying your eyeballs out, like, just aggressively. But
so if you were on a legitimate podcast with a
legitimate podcast. This is legitimate.
Oh, legit.
Well, then I would know how much you won that gold medal by. Was it a close race? Was it a blowout?
Oh, that
US,
was
the US, like,
the US just
them?
Like, yeah,
it,
I mean,
dominated?
Yeah, we dominated pretty good on it. Oh, I mean, US,
you were so performing arrogantly.
Performing arrogantly, yes. Yeah, we were pushing the envelope on that. But it's very interesting competing in the games because you're on deck with, because usually, you know, in the US, it's all, you know, all Americans.
Yeah.
And you go on any international event, and you're standing next to, like, the Chinese team, the Australian team, right. Japanese team. You're with all of these new swimmers, but you also all know the same language because it's swimming.
Right.
You're speaking the same language, even though you're not.
Yeah.
So it's just super cool. But, yeah, I mean, the U.S. is just, we dominate. So
awesome. So in our mission statement, there's the last component of it is that we want our kids to be contributing in whatever community they're in.
Mm-hmm.
So Kendall, you've come back and you've been coaching at Octorera. So talk a little bit about the motivation behind your coaching and the things that you're doing and pouring into other people.
Oh man, I think it's what's incredible and interesting, obviously, about Sierra's story and mine is the stark difference between the two. You know what I mean? Not necessarily with just accomplishments, just like you're very structured at a young age. And I think once I got out of high school, out of Octorera, and I got into college, and I got more immersed in track and field and more experienced and talked to other coaches and been to other events and going over to nationals or doing whatever it is, you say, okay, I want to go back and I want to give these kids something that I couldn't do. You know what I mean? I didn't have the opportunity to have this type of structure, like, oh, I didn't have this, so let me see if I can give this to them and see if we can really churn something out. Mm-hmm. And no matter where you coach, I think there's just always something, to me personally, that is special about where you come from. Yeah. And who you are, and especially me being, like I say, the 130-pound kid from Glenbrook, one of six with a single mom.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Hey man, I was the first four-year grad, we talked about it off air.
Yeah.
I was the first four-year graduate out of our household.
Yeah.
You know, so that was a big thing. I'm the only one to be athletic scholarship in that household, in my entire family.
Yeah.
You know, so there's a lot of boxes that have never been done.
Yeah.
And that'd be nice to come back here and give that to somebody else. Mm-hmm. You know, and try to help out and build up this community. There's a lot of great kids here. There are a lot of great families here.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of people who really just don't know how to go about it.
Mm-hmm.
So if we have the opportunity to provide information and guidance and structure for some of these young kids, I felt obligated to do so.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I talked about my grandfather earlier. He was one of the big guys, one of the big people who pushed for football here.
Mm-hmm.
I played football down at Minch Park. It was a crazy long name, like SECAAMFL, something crazy. Like, you had to be like 13 letters, like, we need to work on a better name. You know, but he would come up here to board meetings. With Mr. Cummings, and they would come up and push for football. And we didn't quite get it when I was there, but it was shortly after he had passed away and they brought football in. It's like, all right, I almost felt obligated. You know, let's continue this work. He's done so many great things here. I want to do good things here. I want to impact this community. And I always just felt very, very attached. So it's nice to come home and contribute when you can,
yeah,
show guidance when you can.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really been it's been awesome and really a full circle moment, I guess you could say.
It's interesting you say that. You know, so I've spent too many years of my life in education, not working in education, but in pursuing my own learning. Mm-hmm. And one piece of research that I think I quote as much as anything else in talking to people is, they did a study of students in schools, and what made them successful. So, you know, what could you correlate to success in K to 12 schools? And the number one correlating factor is something that was completely beyond every kid's control, which is their parents' own educational attainment. Mm. So parents who are, parents with master's degrees, their kids do better in school. That was the number one correlating factor. But the number two correlating factor was your engagement in something. Mm-hmm. And what they found, what the researchers found, it didn't matter what.
Right.
It didn't matter. Mm-hmm. Just that you were engaged in something in school that wasn't academic, or it could have been like a Model UN club. Mm-hmm. But that was the thing that was created this trajectory of success for kids. That even, if you came from a place where there wasn't a high academic, push from parents, which is the number one factor. Mm-hmm. So we as a school, and this is why I worked overseas for 10 years in international schools, and I believe the American system is the best system on earth because I've had kids from all of the other systems in my schools.
Right.
And the reason the American system is so strong and the reason why the Octorera program is so strong is we give so many opportunities for kids and we value them. We think it's important.
Right.
So... both of you took different paths. Both of you have had success. What is it that activity, so now that your athletic careers effectively are over,
yes.
you'll soon be saying what I say. I've now been a lousy athlete a lot longer than I was a decent athlete. But what is it that athletics did for you personally? Now that you can kind of look back.
Right. I'll go there. I guess for me, it was the structure for sure. The structure, the discipline, and the hard work and determination. I mean, I had at home, my mom was like, geez, I'm sure a lot of people know my mom does not play games. You know what I mean? Like, very tough on us, very strict. But yeah, the ability to have some type of discipline and drive. And sometimes just to do things that are outside of yourself.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If you're on, as you were saying, the 4x2 relay, it's like, you want to do well for you. It's like, you got three other females on your team. Mm-hmm. Or it's like, hey, Sierra, you got to bring it. You know what I mean? Like, this is it. Yeah. You know what I mean? You got to pull your own weight. Same thing here with 4x1 relays or 4x4 relays. Or we're running at league meets. It's like, hey, we're going to win this meet. But, that's if I show up and do my part. You know what I mean? So everyone's got to do their part and just have the accountability. The accountability, I think, is a huge thing, especially with today. There's a lot of, blame game, it seems like, within some of the youth. Yeah. You know, being able to take accountability for your actions and say, if I did this, it's because of me, and if I didn't, it's because of me. You know, control what you can control, and all the rest is just that. It's all the rest.
Yeah, I was kind of taken by a press conference I saw with Tyreek Hill reflecting on, and he talked about the things. There's things I need to do differently in a situation like that.
Right.
And it resonated because I thought, this is what youth need to hear.
Right.
It's okay to make a mistake.
Right.
You know, you just own your mistakes.
It's gonna happen. Bumps and bruises, throughout your career. It's never just a strictly upward trajectory.
Yeah. Right.
Career-wise, athletic-wise, life-wise.
Yeah. Right.
There are ups and downs. There are ebbs and flows, and it's how you deal with situations, and adversity, and challenges, and all these things that get in your way. And instead of, looking at it as like, oh, I got drop kicked, I'm just going to stay down.
Right.
I'm going to hop back up and I'm going to figure out how to get past this hurdle, or how do I be better, or how do I problem solve, or how do I do. You learn how to, through athletics, how to push yourself, drive yourself forward. And especially like track and field and swimming, very individual, team oriented, but individual performances, unless you're on relays, but still individual. You have to learn how to drive yourself.
Yeah.
There's nobody else behind you. Yes, a coach is telling you what to do, and yes, you have teammates cheering you on, But you, especially in swimming, it is you, the black line, and water.
Right.
And so you have to be able to. And there was many races where I would, you know, I'd be like, well, I don't really feel like pushing it today. I really hurt. But then you have to be like, no, go. You got this. Mm-hmm. And you learn how to talk to yourself. You learn how to push yourself. You learn how to drive even when you don't want to. And those instances have translated into your, you know, my career, and I think into life is like, what's the next step? How do I get there? What's the problem solve? Yeah, you might get kicked down. You might have hard times. You might need to problem solve, but how do I do that and move forward?
Right.
And that's what I've taken away is just the drive, and accountability is another huge one. I think accountability is huge because it is, you are in charge of your own destiny. You are in charge of your own fate. And if you can't or don't want to take control of that, you can't blame anybody else but yourself.
Right.
The accountability of what can I do to further myself or do better or problem solve or whatever, that is a constant for me in my life. It's constantly looking at how do I be better.
Mm-hmm.
Better right. wife, you know, better work, marketing director,
right.
better just like, you know, oh, I need to go to the gym today. You know,
right. it's yeah, like, yeah. No, it's ever changing. It's ever evolving. Obviously, to piggyback on what you said,
mm-hmm.
We have a lot of these discussions, my wife and I, and it's like, yeah, it's about how, like, are you self-aware?
Mm-hmm.
You know, where we can look in the mirror and I can say, I gave it what I had today,
mm-hmm.
or, you know,
yeah.
I dropped the ball in whatever. I could mm-hmm. have been a better dad today. I could have been a better husband today. Mm-hmm. I could have been a better coach today. And after every season, I kind of, you know, I look at the season, I'm looking at kids' times, I'm kind of looking at these, and I'm looking at relationships that
mm-hmm.
we've built, because really that's what this is about, in my
yeah.
opinion. Like, life is life. We buy things, we do things, we go places. We're building relationships here.
Yeah.
You know, when we're born,
yeah.
you build relationships with people, you want to grow this thing, and then we die. You yeah. know, so it's like, I want to have my limbs go as far as I can reach them,
yeah.
mm-hmm.
touch as many as I can, and hopefully have a positive imprint on it.
Yeah.
But having the ability to be self-aware is such an undervalued
mm-hmm.
trait, I believe. It's something that you have to really every day take a look in that mirror, you know, and ask some tough questions. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, with swimming, I'm sure you, we talked about a tenth of a second, a 100th of a second.
Mm-hmm.
And within that, it's like, I remember calling my mom up at a conference meet, and I just come off injury. It had a redshirt year, come off injury, come back, and I am just not there. I'm not healthy yet.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I want to quit. I want to.
Yeah.
And she says, if you want to quit, quit. And she hangs up the phone. And I'm like, are you got to be kidding me? Yeah, like, you got to be kidding
huh?
me. And I'm like, all right, well, I guess I'm not quitting. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it ended up being like one of my best years at the end of the year. But
yeah.
it's like, you got to learn how to go through those tough times. And
yeah.
there's going to be times with even your athletes or your kids, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, it's like, hey, you kind of got to give them a little, you got to let them figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They got to have room to fail.
Yeah.
That's it.
I always say to the kids that I coach and the kids that I interact with my job, I always say, you are the driver.
That's it.
You are always the driver. You are always in control of your own, the pathway that you take. You are the driver. Yeah, you might have people in the back seat that might want to backseat drive or whatever,
yep.
but you have to be the driver of what you want to do.
Yep.
Your parents can't, your coach can't, your teacher can't. Nobody but is the driver but you.
Yeah.
And you have to take control of that.
Yeah, that's very true. And that's one other thing, obviously, not. I feel like we're like going on about this, but this is a good topic. I feel like this is a really good topic we're on here, so let's just keep it going, right?
Well, go ahead.
No, you can go ahead.
No, I was going to say, so before we started recording, we were just chatting, and
mm-hmm.
You both were talking about specialization.
Mm.
And, you know, oddly enough,
right.
we have two Division I athletes
right.
that you would think would be advocates for specialization.
Right.
Because, you know, you had to advocate very early
mm-hmm.
right.
for, you had to, I shouldn't say advocate, you had to commit
mm-hmm.
very early
right.
to specialization,
mm-hmm.
but you don't necessarily believe specialization is a great thing for young
no.
kids.
No, I think every athlete kind of has their own trajectory and their own pathway to what they end up being or wanting to do or however you want to, you know, look at it. But I specialize very early because I am, like I said off air, I am not good on land. I am not good with balls. I am not good on land. You ask me to track something, it's not. I think I played soccer for one season and I was a goalie. I had somebody kick a goal and I was like, that's it. I was like, I don't want to do it. I like swimming. So for me, it was a very early on special, just because I was so, like, I was like dog with a bone. Like, I just wanted that from day one.
But nobody else was necessarily pushing you and telling
no.
you had to do that.
No, that was all me. At that point, like I would cry if I missed practice. Gotcha. Later in my career, I was like, oh, missing practice, yay. No, when I was younger, it was like I would cry if I missed practice. Mm-hmm. But that was my choice, and that I was the driver in that. And my parents and everybody just like kind of was like, okay. But I don't necessarily advocate for it, mm-hmm. because I think the athlete should be able to choose what they want to do. If they decide they want to try other sports, ultimately that, to me, that prevents burnout.
Yeah.
Because the burnout is, I mean, it can happen really fast if you specialize really early, is you just get sick of it.
Yeah.
And your body is beat up, you're beat up, you're like, this is just not, you know. And then people end up quitting early or retiring early because of that burnout. Whereas if you don't specialize and you have fun and you do different things with different teammates and your body is still getting what it needs. It's still getting the training. You're still running. You're still lifting. You're still exercising. But it's not necessarily everything, you know, pounding the road towards the final, you know, whatever that might be. Now, you might specialize in college, but I'm not a huge fan of, like, 5 years old specializing, 10 years old specializing, yeah. even in high school. You yeah. play around with it and have fun. Yeah. That's the thing about athletics that I think sometimes can get lost is everybody expects people to, you know, kids to just like, my kid's going to the Olympics. They're seven. Like, of course, yes, you want that for your kid, sure. But does your kid want that?
Right.
And are they having fun yeah. in the process of getting there? And that's where sports are supposed to be fun. And if your kid isn't having fun or you're not having fun, what's the point?
Yeah.
Right.
And that's what I think, like, the specializing can sometimes kind of, like, mute that fun.
No, I 100% agree with you there. We talked about it off air. I spent a lot of time personal training as well, doing some speed training and athletic training with other sports, you know, mm-hmm. football, field hockey, whatever, worked with some of the girls here as mm-hmm. well a few years, soccer players. And a lot of times parents will always ask, well, why do you think there's so many ACLs? Why do you think there's so many mm-hmm. Achilles? I said, mm-hmm. if you want to be honest, I think the specialization mm-hmm. at a young age mm-hmm. is a huge, huge contributor to all of these injuries, even in the NFL. Now, granted, the NFL guys, I think, are just bigger and stronger. Yeah. They're faster, and you're asking their joints to move and cut. And your body, at some point, it's like you're 220 pounds. You're running 4 or 5.
Yeah.
Your knee's only going to take so many cuts. You know, but I think when you're using your muscles in the same way, in mm-hmm. the same plane of motion, you're asking for a recipe for disaster, mm-hmm. in my opinion. So the ability for me to even just to play basketball a little bit and being able to jump and run up and down the court and stop and go and stop and go mm-hmm. helped me tremendously in track to stay fresh. Mm-hmm. When I got to college, and a lot of people gave me flack for this, we essentially come in from August. It's not mandatory practice. That's mandatory practice. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, it's optional practice. But it's, yeah, but it's pretty much mandatory yes. practice. Yeah. So it's like first week, you don't do anything. The next week's like, we're going,
yeah.
you know? So from August to May for track, I'm almost every day, you know, 6 or 7 days, mm-hmm. we're going to lift 3 days a week. I'm going to race on a Saturday. I might not race until December. Then we're going to race all the way through. Mm-hmm. So for me, it was like, I got done. It's like, hey, you're going to do summer workouts. I'm like, are you kidding me? Yeah. No. And I never did. And I'm not encouraging this to, you know what I mean? Yeah. If you're someone who does and you don't miss yeah. and that's your thing, that's your thing. What I needed was like air.
Space.
Yeah. You know, I needed a minute to like step away from it, to miss it, and then go back and love it.
Yeah. yeah.
You know, so then I would play basketball in the summer. I would go to the beach, play. I was in shape, you know, but I wasn't in track, you know what I mean, yeah. optimal shape. So could you look back at some of that and some say, do you regret it? I have no regrets about it. Maybe if I had done it, maybe I'd be an All-American. Mm-hmm. But I don't regret any of it. You know what I mean? So it's kind of being able to know what you can do yeah. and what you can handle as an individual. Yeah. But as far as specialization, I think that kids should play as many sports as possible yeah. as long as they can until you get to the nitty-gritty of, like, you know, sophomore, junior, senior year where yeah. it's like, hey, I'm really good at this. And it's like, okay, then maybe we can specialize. But up to that point, I think you should do as much as you can. Yeah. And even the kids at the top, if you look at it, for example, the NFL, mm-hmm. 15 out of the 32 draft picks, they all did multiple sports, mm-hmm. all of them. Mm-hmm. Like, these guys are going to all across the board. They're going to run. They're going to jump. And obviously, swimming is so much different. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But a lot more.
You don't do land.
but in most cases, you know, you'll see some of the best runners on our team were soccer players. They played mm-hmm. on the soccer team. Mm-hmm. Some of the best girls, you know. So you'll see a little bit of crossover like that. But I am not in any favor. My son will play as many as he can, as long as he can.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing is, it's the simple fact that in college you can do some intramurals,
mm-hmm.
yeah. and there might be a town softball league or something.
Club, or,
yeah.
High school is, for most kids, that's the end of athletic opportunity for most people.
Right.
And that's the thing that when I see a student who forgoes a sport that I know would help them developmentally, the one that they love. But I've also seen athletes that were all state in one sport, but earned a very expensive scholarship in another sport to go to college.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And because they didn't close the door on that second sport, which wasn't their love.
Right.
And then that same athlete is now, it was a basketball player that ended up playing football in college and ended up on an intramural team, intramural basketball team with every player on the team, football team, was an all-state basketball player.
Wow.
So they're just tearing up
the
league. In his junior year, this is a school in the A-10, they had a rash of injuries on their basketball team. And the coach asked if he would come and play for a month with their team in the A-10.
Right.
And he called and said, I just can't do it. I said, you're going to pass up Madison Square Garden?
Right, right.
That's crazy. This is your dream. Mm-hmm. He's like, I just can't do it. Academically, I can't do it. You know, the off season is the heavier academic season. So his balance completely shifted.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, his dream, which didn't come to fruition, was no longer his dream.
Right. And
he had kind of moved on to other things. Well, you guys have been so incredibly generous with your time. I really, really appreciate it. The last thing is, one piece of advice for, it could be a high school athlete or a high school student. What would be your advice to a high school student?
I think mine, I said in the speech I did today, is just pursue what sets your soul on fire.
Mm-hmm.
I forget what the poem is, but I had it like on my, I had like a whole wall, the year of the Olympics. I had like all these quotes, all this stuff. And it was, I think it was, be relentless in the pursuit of what sets your soul on fire. Mm. And it can be athletics. It can be club. It can be,
Poetry.
Poetry. Right. Yeah. It's like whatever you're passionate about, be relentless in what sets your soul on fire. Because if you allow that to get extinguished, there's nothing, there's nothing to drive you. There's nothing to, I don't want to say live for, because that's strong.
Yeah.
But have goals, have, desires, reach for things that you might think is unobtainable.
Right.
Because you don't know.
Yeah.
If I had said at, 10, like, and, Olympic gold medal feels like it's a stretch. Up until, it didn't become truly a reality until I was 17, 18 years old. And even then, you're still fighting for your life to get there.
Yeah.
But if I had said, I feel like I probably won't hit it, I wouldn't be there. Yeah. I wouldn't be an Olympic gold medalist. So be relentless in what pursuits your soul, or the pursuit of what sets your soul on fire would be my, I think, key takeaway, no matter what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Just be relentless.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's huge. Mine's along those lines as well. I think a lot of it is just being able to just really go for whatever it is that you want to do and not be discouraged. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of just, lack of confidence, which is really hard to try to build in the youth.
Mm-hmm.
So just to be able, I talked a little bit about self-talk, positive self-talk.
Yeah.
And it's like, we're not going to say that we can't do things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like my son watches, for instance, he's randomly started watching Peppa Pig somehow.
Yeah.
And they say on there, like, it's impossible. And so my wife's like, we're not watching this anymore. She says, what? Like,
bad cartoon.
We don't speak that. Like, I don't speak that. Yeah. We're not going to speak negativity into our lives. Yeah. Nothing's impossible. We're going to work hard.
Yeah.
We're going to put our feet to the fire and let's get it done.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But we're not going to say it's impossible or I can't do it or I'm not. No, you can't. If you want to do it, let's do it. Mm-hmm. I have the means. Like, I can call, make a call. We can get it. You know what I mean? Like,
well, and there's studies out there like that when I was swimming, you don't say what you don't want to happen.
Right.
So I would say, like, if I said, I don't want a false start, you have a higher chance of false starting.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you say, I want to have a good start. I want to have a fast start. I want to have a good race. Yeah. It's kind of the same thing. It's like you don't speak that into existence.
Yeah.
You do it positively. So even if it's like, I don't want to false start. I want to have a good start. Yeah. I want to have, you know, X. I want to achieve this goal is kind of the same thing.
Yeah, you can put a spin on anything. To me, it's like we come in and it's a hailstorm. I'm like, at least we got an umbrella. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to try to find the most positive situation out of everything because, what are we doing here? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Why aren't we being positive? Why is it frowned upon to be positive?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, it's to me, it's always just trying to have a positive outlook on life in whatever it is that you choose to do, not always just athletics. If it's academics, you want to be a doctor, you want to be a gardener. You know what I mean? It doesn't matter. Do it with your entire soul. And if it doesn't work out, find another way. You know what I mean? It can always work out. So
my father-in-law, who passed away 2 years ago, he had a saying that my wife has in her classroom on this mural. And it was, if it's impossible, if it's difficult, I'll do it right away.
Mm-hmm. Right.
If it's possible, give me a little time to think about it.
Yeah.
And that was his attitude. Like, you know, whatever you think is impossible,
just
give me some time to think about it. I'm pretty sure we can work
on it. Yeah, you can find a way.
Yeah.
You can find a way. Yeah. There's always a way.
Yeah. So thank you guys.
Yeah, thank
for
you.
For being here. I don't know if to name the title of this Speak Humbly and Perform Arrogantly, or
that was a good one, right?
But
I'm gonna add that. I literally have a note that just has coach quotes, and it's like I'm adding that in. That's a good one.
That's a good one. So thank you both for being here. I appreciate it. This kicks off our second season. You're probably right before the next podcast with probably like some kindergartners. So.
Set the bar high for
us.
That's right. So thank you very much.
Yeah.
And I appreciate so much you guys being here today and interacting with our kids and kind of, you know, what you're bringing back to the community through just your presence and kind of your message and your, you know, sharing your trajectory and your successes and your challenges. So we appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks for having us. This is awesome.
Yeah, thanks so much for having us. I really had a good time.
Yeah.
Best wishes.